Welcome back to a site where the questions are ancient and the stakes are eternal. I Can Do Coaching keeps showing up to both.
This episode covers faithfulness under pressure, the witness of biblical women, where trust and peace actually come from, and what resilience looks like when it gets personal. Let's start with what it costs to keep doing good when it isn't working.
The through line across these posts is a simple, uncomfortable question. What do you do when faithfulness makes your life harder, not easier?
Do not lose heart in well-doing sets the frame directly. Here's Paul's instruction to the Galatians. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary.
The upshot is that weariness is treated as a given, not a sign something's wrong, but the normal friction of faithful living. The harvest language matters. You're farming, not sprinting.
Jesus is the model the post keeps returning to. Tired at the well in John 4, he still spoke to the Samaritan woman. Grieved in Gethsemane, he still went to the cross. The post's phrase is direct. Tired, but not done.
That's a pretty demanding baseline.
Forgetting leads to failure shows what happens when endurance quietly erodes. Israel's pattern in Judges, faithfulness under Joshua, then a slow drift once that generation was gone, is framed as a failure of memory more than a failure of will.
Forgetting God isn't always dramatic. The post makes the point that backsliders are often the last to notice they've drifted.
Excel still more pushes the other direction, not warning against failure, but calling a functioning congregation to keep growing. Paul's word to Thessalonica was abound more and more, even when things were already going well.
Contentment with good enough is its own form of stopping.
A verse to remember anchors that growth in a single text, 2 Timothy 2:8, remembering the resurrection of Jesus as the motivating center of faithfulness. And the gospel that never expires closes the loop. The commands still stand, the promises are still offered, and neutrality isn't an option. The Bible is enough reinforces why. The apostles' record is sufficient. No supplemental revelation required. Which brings us to the people who modeled this faithfulness quietly, without fanfare.
Dorcas gets one appearance in the book of Acts, and somehow that's enough to anchor an entire framework for how to live.
The Dorcas stare puts it plainly. She was abounding in kindness and charity, which she continually did. The word continually is doing real work there. Not a single generous act, but a sustained practice.
The post's challenge is pointed. When you die, what will people remember? And more urgently, what is God saying about you right now?
Godly Mothers extends that same pattern across Jochebed, Hannah, and Mary. Each one trusted God with something she couldn't control. A hidden infant, a promised son given back, a calling she didn't fully understand. The through line is faith that outlasts the moment.
Faithfulness in the small and unseen turns out to be the same skill whether you're making garments in Joppa or hiding a baby in a river.
And that kind of trust doesn't come from circumstances being calm, which is exactly what the next segment is about.
David wrote Psalm 23 as a man who knew what valleys actually felt like, and that's what makes it land differently than a greeting card.
King David, a real man, opens with the full psalm, then unpacks the man behind it. Here's the line that grounds the whole post. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me.
That's not optimism. That's someone who has been in the valley reporting back.
Peace in every circumstance makes the same point through the storm on the Sea of Galilee. Jesus asleep in the boat, the apostles panicking, and the peace on offer isn't the absence of storms, but a Lord who is present inside them.
Meanwhile, contagious complaining tracks what happens when that trust erodes. Israel in Numbers 11 starts grumbling on the fringes of camp, and it spreads fast, all the way to Moses himself.
The post's observation is sharp. Complaining rewrites reality. It blinds people to blessings and distorts memory. "Behold, I thought" puts a face on that resistance. Naaman refusing the cure he came for because it wasn't the cure he imagined.
Pride is a very expensive way to stay sick.
All of which points toward a different kind of resilience. One that shows up in unexpected places. Like a magic show.
A brain tumor diagnosis is not the obvious starting point for a conversation about superpower. But here we are.
The conversation with magician John Kippen in Being Different is Your Superpower traces exactly that arc. Illness, loss of confidence, then the slow rebuilding of identity through magic and storytelling. The central claim is that what makes you different is the thing worth leaning into, not hiding.
And then there's you have to at least try, which is the same argument with mud on its boots. A personal story about driving to Mexico, preaching 2 sermons and halting Spanish, driving 12 hours home feeling like a failure, and only realizing years later that the attempt itself was the win.
The Post flags a useful reframe from Hardy and Sullivan. Measuring from the gap between where you are and where you want to be versus measuring from the gain of how far you've actually come.
The art of drawing Marvel and DC with Brent Peoples rounds it out. Years of rejection before breaking into the industry, persistence as the actual method, and now a pivot into faith-based apparel that uses design to start conversations. Different medium, same principle.
Try, stay different, measure the gain.
So, keep going when it's hard, serve quietly, trust through the valley, and try the thing you're afraid to try. That's the territory.
And none of it is static. The posts keep returning to the idea that growth is the direction, not a destination. More of that next time.